This Morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
You're fired. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Wednesday, May 10, welcome aboard. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump has terminated FBI Director James Comey. The questions, what happens now to the Russia investigation Comey was leading, and who will replace him?
A portion of a tunnel collapsed at the Hanford nuclear waste site in Washington State, sending hundreds of workers scrambling for cover.
The U.S. will arm Syria's Kurdish fighters against ISIS in the Syrian city of Raqqa. Turkey is upset because it considers the Kurds to be terrorists.
And trending this year at college graduation ceremonies, no talk of presidential politics.
Last year, 2016, the commencement season had a lot of attacks on Donald Trump. He was only the presumptive GOP nominee then for president. So we wondered, well, what's it going to be like this year when the man is president? But so far, the speakers we've talked to and the ones that have already spoken are not mentioning Trump.
Rick Hampson at USA Today on guidelines for commencement speakers this spring. He's here in about 25 minutes. A lot to get through this morning. President Trump has unexpectedly fired FBI Director James Comey. The big question now, what happens to the investigation into whether Mr. Trump's campaign collaborated with the Russian government to influence the presidential election? Both sides, as you know, have denied it. New Jersey Democratic Senator Cory Booker reacted on Twitter.
Now, as much as ever, we need an independent special counsel to investigate Russian interference in our elections.
The Comey firing came from the recommendations of Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. White House spokesman Sean Spicer spoke with ABC News.
This is a decision that it was made by someone who's been a career prosecutor who President Obama appointed U.S. attorney in Maryland, made the decision that he lost the confidence, and the attorney general agreed with that. The president agreed with their recommendations.
Mr. Comey has made few friends on either side of the aisle when he announced his decision to recommend the Justice Department not seek charges against Hillary Clinton. He was chastised by Republicans. The Democrats wanted him out when he sent that letter to Congress 11 days before the election that new emails had been found on Mrs. Clinton's server. The firing, by the way, came on the same day the FBI walked back comments made by Mr. Comey last week, acknowledging he overstated evidence related to an investigation into Mrs. Clinton's email use. So who will be the next FBI boss? Here's this morning's Mike Gavin.
Presidents have often turned to former U.S. attorneys and judges to fill the job. The Wall Street Journal says some possible options include former Deputy Attorneys General Mark Philip and Larry Thompson. Mr. Philip worked in the Bush administration. Mr. Thompson is close with current Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Former U.S. attorneys who also serve as judges, Robert Conrad, a judge in North Carolina, and Stephen Murphy, a judge in Michigan. From the political ranks, South Carolina Congressman Trey Gowdy is a possibility. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. USA Today, by the way, says two former New York officials are potentials, former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly. Let's get further analysis now from Matt Mikowiak, Republican consultant, columnist for The Washington Times, also host of a podcast called Mac on Politics. Matt, your initial reaction.
Yeah, look, it's stunning news. You don't see the President of the United States fire the FBI director, except in quite extraordinary circumstances. I was reminded on social media that President Clinton fired an FBI director in the 90s, but these things just don't happen. FBI directors are confirmed for 10-year terms. It's one of the solemn responsibilities in a government to be the FBI director, the top law enforcement officer, the most independent official in our government. There's no sugarcoating this. This is obviously a very stunning development. Now, that said, Comey has had a lot of critics, aiming their arrows at him over the past year or two. There's Republicans are mad that he did not charge Hillary Clinton or did not recommend a charge against Hillary Clinton for the classified information or classified email investigation. Democrats are mad that he reopened the investigation when he got new evidence from Anthony Weiner's laptop. And, of course, a couple of days ago, he gave false testimony to Congress under oath when he said that Huma Abedin, the top aide to Hillary Clinton, had forwarded hundreds, if not thousands, of emails of classified information to her husband to print for Hillary. Turns out it wasn't that many. It might have been much smaller number, perhaps a dozen. So he had identified Congress that he had given false testimony. So Comey has been taking on water in a lot of different ways in the last few months.
All right. It didn't seem like, as you pointed out, Mr. Comey had a ton of support. You mentioned the kind of the election related stuff, but I mean, it's the president's right, correct? I mean, he's in the office. He can pick and choose, basically, right?
No, that's exactly right. He has the power to fire, you know, anyone in the government, certainly anyone that's a political appointee, and an FBI director is a political appointee. Now, again, the FBI director is not like a cabinet official or someone else in the federal government. The FBI director is generally seen as being more independent and in some ways almost untouchable.
Okay.
But so these things do happen. They just happen very, very rarely. You know, it's fascinating to see Democrats complain for months about Jim Comey's reign as FBI director, and then instead of celebrating something they've been calling for months, they now believe this is another Saturday night massacre. They now effectively oppose firing the person that they've wanted fired for the last 6 or 9 months.
Yeah.
It's kind of stunning.
We're speaking with Matt Mikowiak, Republican consultant, also a Washington Times columnist and host of a podcast called Mac on Politics. And we're talking about the firing of FBI Director James Comey by President Trump. What about a replacement now? Who? Any early names on the rumor mill?
You know, look, this just happened. It sounds like, based on the reporting from Michael Schmidt, New York Times, that this is something that Trump had wanted to do for several days, or perhaps a week, and that the Justice Department was considering what the justification could be when they were putting all that together. And that was put together in the letter that they sent to FBI Director Comey announcing his firing. So it's still early for names. I mean, I think you could perhaps envision a scenario where Trump puts forward someone who's a loyalist but who has law enforcement experience. You know, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is term limited as governor, and he's out this November. He's a former United States attorney. You could see Rudy Giuliani, a former top official in the Justice Department and a former U.S. attorney himself, former mayor of New York City, perhaps. We'll see who else. You know, I suggested Asa Hutchinson, the governor of Arkansas, who also has a tremendous amount of law enforcement experience, ran the DEA, was a number three official of Homeland Security. But honestly, it's unknowable right now because this just happened, and they're going to have to come up with a list of 5 or 10 people, do initial interviews, narrow it down, see who can get confirmed, see what the Senate leadership thinks about a short list, see what Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley thinks of a short list, and seek opinions from Capitol Hill, because they're going to want someone to get confirmed.
Republican consultant Matt Mikowiak, also a columnist for The Washington Times. Couple other points here. Senate Democrats have been asked by Minority Leader Chuck Schumer to be in the Senate chamber at 9:30 this morning when the legislative day begins. They want to see if Republican leader Mitch McConnell will address the Comey firing. By the way, in a late night tweet, Mr. Trump targeted Mr. Schumer, saying, quote, "Crying Chuck Schumer stated recently, I do not have confidence in James Comey any longer, then acts so indignant. Hashtag drain the swamp." And lastly, Mr. Trump plans to meet with Russia's foreign minister today, Sergey Lavrov. It'll be the first face-to-face contact between the president and a senior official of the Russian government. 15 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Ready for hundreds of millions of potential new customers? Come to a 2-day conference in Detroit in June to hear about Alibaba, the Chinese version of what's described as Amazon plus Google. Today, China represents an unprecedented opportunity for American business owners and entrepreneurs. Alibaba, an e-commerce platform, can connect you with 500 million consumers. You can buy and sell anything. Learn more about the worldwide marketplace of Alibaba at Gateway 17, June 20th to the 22nd. Meet experts, make relationships, and learn from companies already in China. You'll also hear Jack Ma, the ultimate entrepreneur and China expert. Gateway 17 has limited availability, but our listeners can save 50% off the registration fee by going to gateway17.com and using the code DEAL when you register. That's gateway17.com, GATEWAY17.com, and enter DEAL. 50% off the registration fee, but only if you use DEAL when you sign up at gateway17.com. Glenn's on board this Wednesday. Unsettling moments in Washington state after hundreds of workers were warned to take cover after a tunnel collapsed in an old plutonium uranium extraction plant that was previously used in nuclear weapons production. 200 miles southeast of Seattle, the tunnel at the Hanford plant building, known as Purex, was full of contaminated particles, including radioactive train cars that transported fuel rods. The 20 feet by 20 feet area at the nuclear waste site that suffered the collapse was built during the Cold War and sits over a tunnel which is hundreds of feet long. Authorities say 8 feet of soil covers the tunnel, and the soil appeared to have collapsed into the tunnel. Here's Hanford spokesman Mark Heater.
There was a stop work for all of the workers in the 200 East area of the Hanford site, which is where this facility is located. And once they were able to determine that it was safe enough for people to get up and move about, people were released from that stop work.
There's no indication of contamination spread during this event. Officials continue to monitor air quality and are working on a fix. Plutonium production, by the way, ended at the site in the 1980s, and cleanup began in 1989. The Associated Press says nobody has entered the main portion of that plant in 20 years. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
President Trump has fired FBI Director James Comey over what his administration says was Comey's handling of the inquiry into Hillary Clinton's emails. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer spoke with ABC News.
When you look at the bipartisan nature that should welcome this, you had, you know, Senator Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, all calling for acknowledging the lack of confidence they had in the FBI director over the last several months.
But Democrats say Comey was fired because the FBI was investigating alleged links between the Trump campaign and Russia. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
Now, as much as ever, we need an independent special counsel to investigate Russian interference in our elections.
Comey was addressing FBI agents in Los Angeles when he learned he had been fired when he saw the news on television. Federal prosecutors have issued grand jury subpoenas seeking business records from people who worked with former U.S. National Security Advisor Michael Flynn when he was a private citizen. CNN is reporting that the subpoenas target people who worked with Flynn on contracts after he was pushed out of his job as director of the Defense Intelligence Agency in 2014. A top Syrian Kurdish official is welcoming the U.S. decision to arm Kurdish fighters with heavier weapons, saying it would legitimize the force as it prepares to march on Raqqa, the de facto capital of ISIS. But the decision is rattling Turkey, something White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer acknowledges.
We're keenly aware of the security concerns of our coalition partners in Turkey. We want to reassure the people and the government of Turkey that the U.S. is committed to preventing additional security risks and protecting our NATO ally.
Turkey considers the Syrian Kurdish group known as YPG to be a terror organization. New York's American Museum of Natural History has an intriguing proposition. Bring in anything you have and don't know what it is, and scientists will try to identify it. Saturday is what the museum calls its annual Identification Day, devoted to helping people break the mystery of their specimens, such as shells, rocks, insects, feathers, and bones. Items identified in previous years have included a whale jawbone, a fossilized giraffe vertebra, and a 5,000-year-old stone spear point from Morocco.
Goodness gracious.
You have anything laying around you need to figure out?
I don't know. We might have to start digging. There's a couple of this is at least like one spot in New Jersey where you can do that, I think, just to look for old stuff.
Oh, I'm sure
then
left,
travel
yeah.
a few miles over to the museum and get it looked at. Wow. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. Thanks for being with us. Time for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Dell. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is saying thank you with up to 40% off business PCs with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Small Business Advisor today at 877-BY-DELL. If you haven't seen this at your company, it may be on the way. Welcome to the era of the never-ending performance review. As companies like Adobe Systems and General Electric revamp and rethink the detested annual review, they've put in place new evaluations designed to give employees more frequent feedback. It's a story from Wall Street Journal management reporter Rachel Feinzig. Rachel, what's up at the office?
Well, a lot of companies are transitioning away from that once-a-year performance review, and instead they're putting into place quarterly evaluations, whether it's goal setting or apps that allow workers to request feedback on demand, you know, at any time. It's really breaking up performance management and integrating it, you know, week by week into people's work lives.
Wow. Tell me about these apps, apps that can give you feedback on demand.
Yeah, so a lot of companies, GE has one. Some of them are homegrown. Others use products from HR tech companies. But the idea, usually how it works, is that an employee sends a request to a manager to give them feedback. And some of them, like one of the consulting firms, the manager actually drags a bar to show where you fall on a continuum on five different skills. Other ones are more open-ended. You can kind of just fill out, you know, some kind of like open-ended sentences about someone. Some of them have word limits. They're meant to be kind of like a Twitter-length, quick hits type of thing. Mm-hmm. So they do kind of vary.
This strikes me as a reversal of a trend. Weren't we, we in general, arguing that we might not need performance reviews or we're doing them the wrong way or something like that?
Well, it kind of goes hand in hand with that, because a lot of companies have said we don't want to do the annual review because we think there are all these problems and ill effects from calling someone into a room once a year and assigning them a number. But instead, what we're going to do is give them constant feedback. So it is a little ironic. It might seem counterintuitive, but this trend actually goes hand in hand with the other one.
Right, so are there particular industries that are tending toward this, or is it broad?
You know, it's been broad. I feel like it kind of started with tech, but it's moved into big banks, consulting firms, some members of the Big Four. It really runs the gamut. I even found like a small healthcare company that's doing this.
It's Wall Street Journal management reporter Rachel Feinsig. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In business, risks and rewards come with every decision, like moving to the cloud with Office 365. While its benefits include anywhere access and lower costs, cyber threats and user errors can quickly wipe out data and the money you save. Barracuda Essentials for Office 365 provide an added layer of security and functionality for threat protection, email migration, data recovery, and quality of service. Move securely to Office 365. Visit barracuda.com/essentials to learn more.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Wednesday, May 10, Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: Trump fires FBI Director Comey. CNN says grand jury subpoenas have been issued to associates of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. Scare at a nuclear waste site in Washington State. Seattle's mayor won't seek re-election, accused of paying teen boys for sex. A nurse with a bladder condition says United Airlines made her pee in a cup because the fastened seatbelt sign was on. A judge vacates the Aaron Hernandez murder conviction since he died in prison before his appeal. And the party on board a Southwest Airlines flight. That story in about 20 minutes. Warning for college commencement speakers. Most of your listeners are not interested in your politics. They want to hear your wisdom, experiences, anecdotes, sincerity, and things like humor. USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson says mentions of President Trump and party politics have been conspicuously absent from the speeches that have already been given this year. Rick, what are we seeing?
Well, Gordon, last year, 2016, the commencement season had a lot of attacks on Donald Trump. He was only the presumptive GOP nominee then for president. But Ken Burns, the documentary filmmaker, sort of the voice of authority, really had some harsh words for him at Stanford. He never mentioned Trump's name, but he accused him of an incipient proto-fascism, as well as being a jingoistic saber-rattler and with dictatorial tendencies. And other people, Matt Damon at MIT, Elizabeth Warren at Suffolk University. Spike Lee at Johns Hopkins said he had nightmares about Trump starting World War III. So we wondered, well, what's it going to be like this year when the man is president? Mm. But so far, the speakers we've talked to and the ones that have already spoken are not mentioning Trump.
And is that of their own design, or is that college bigwig saying, we don't want any of that here?
Well, to some extent, certainly not the latter. Nobody's telling them what to say. But in doing this story, you find out that a lot of commencement speakers are first-time speakers. And so naturally, the first thing you do is say, you know, what do I do? It seems like a big assignment and a tough one. And the first thing they're all told is, it's not about you. Mm. So many of them have concluded from that, whatever their political preferences are, it's about the graduates. And also sort of a more eternal, lasting message rather than one about, you know, today's partisan politics. So they talk about all sorts of things other than Trump.
Okay. So have the guidelines changed? Does it generally leave the politics out?
Well, there are no guidelines per se, but I think that the way speakers have interpreted the challenge of a commencement speech in the spring of 2017 says, don't talk about Trump, don't talk about party politics, talk about something else. The man who will be speaking at Providence College is going to remember his own graduation from Providence in the Vietnam War year of 1970 and what that was like. The man who will be giving the speech at Hillsdale College in Illinois said, he's not going to talk about Trump. He says his only question is whether to talk about Milton or Dante or Dr. Samuel Johnson. So he's dwelling on a different level. Each of these speakers seems to have simply taken a different tack other than speaking about the thing that's really, in some ways, on everybody's mind,
yeah,
which is Trump.
Mm. We're speaking with Rick Hampson, national correspondent at USA Today. He's written a piece entitled, At College Commencement Speeches in 2017, It's a No Trump Zone on Most Campuses. How about humor?
Well, make them laugh is always the gold standard. I interviewed an expert, a connoisseur of commencement speeches, who has a whole website dedicated to the best ones, and she says funny speeches are best, which, as you know, is easier said than done.
Right.
Fareed Zakaria, the CNN analyst, said he didn't really want to talk about Trump, but if he does talk about Trump, he'll do so humorously because, as he put it, there is so much about him that lends itself to humor. But the problem, of course, as he also noted, is that there's a lot of competition. So if you think you can be funny, go ahead, but it's not for everybody.
Thanks, Rick. USA Today national correspondent Rick Hampson. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can find us on Facebook and friend us there. You can follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm with your cornflakes, you can follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. Thanks for being with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's been a week of animal invaders at baseball stadiums around the country. First, a swarm of bees settled into the Kansas City Royals Stadium before their game against the Cleveland Indians over the weekend. The bees seemed to be attracted to a red, white, and blue banner near the front row of one of the upper levels. The good news is one of the Royals grounds crew members also happens to be a beekeeper. He made his way to the upper deck and managed to remove the bees without even wearing a bee suit. The Royals seem to be on the bees' radar as they had a similar encounter with a bee swarm during a spring training game last year. And a minor league game in California was briefly put on hold after a player spotted a snake in the outfield. The Sacramento River Cats shared video of a grounds crew member holding a snake that temporarily delayed their game against the Reno Aces on Sunday. The good news for River Cats players is that despite the team being an affiliate of the Arizona Diamondbacks, this snake was only a harmless garter snake.
Garter snakes are the snack of Diamondbacks.
yeah, pretty much. I mean, it wasn't like it sounds like, you know, the players were all scared and you're running off the field. It wasn't like that. Basically, they were like, look, there's a snake on the field. You know, if a ball comes near me and the snake, I don't want to step on it or dive on it. So that's why they stopped the game,
right,
get the snake off the field. It wasn't like they were cowering in the corner someplace while, you know, the grounds crew went out and removed the snake.
Whatever you say, Mike. How about that Royals grounds crew guy
with
no bee suit?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like sitting with the other guys, sees the bees, and he's like, guys, hold my hot dog.
Yeah. I'll hold my beer. I got this.
I'll be right back.
I got this, guys.
By the way, speaking of encounters with animals.
Yeah.
You sort of survived, let's call it, your ride to work this morning.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, look, this, we deal with this every day here in central New Jersey. Is an entire family of deer was probably within a foot of getting hit by my truck this morning.
Just slam on the brakes, swerve, or you saw them in time?
Luckily, like I was going relatively slowly. I was kind of pulling off the highway onto the side road, so I wasn't going super fast. So I managed to slam on the brakes fairly easily, but I came within like a foot or two.
And that was about 15 minutes. It's after you had been pulled over by a New Jersey State Trooper
right
on the highway on the way in.
Who said I was swerving around on the road for some reason?
You had like the most adventurous 2 a.m. hour ever.
Yeah. And then I had to explain.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Were you swerving?
Yeah. I mean, I probably was a couple of inches here and there.
What I need is a simple yes or no. Were you swerving? Like, would the dash cam footage on the trooper's car show it?
Look, I mean, why would they have pulled me over otherwise, right? I'm not going to dispute the findings of the state police of New Jersey. There's a very good chance. I'm holding my coffee in one hand. Uh-huh. I had my left arm on the steering wheel. It's possible I was moving a few inches side to side. That time of the morning, there aren't a lot of people going to work. They think, you know, maybe I was coming home from the bar.
So you think you have the right to a minimum of two lanes?
Yes.
That's what you think.
Look, I was the only one on the road. I should get at least two lanes.
No further questions, Your Honor.
And speaking of possible booze, possible alcohol, and what could be one of the most obvious studies ever, Gordon, researchers now say that booze could be a great painkiller. According to research from London's Greenwich University, published in the Journal of Pain, patients whose blood alcohol level is 0.08% have a higher pain threshold than a reduction in pain intensity. In pain intensity. The downside, of course, is that 0.08% is also the level considered to be legally drunk in the U.S. They say that more research is needed to determine whether alcohol reduces feelings of pain by affecting the brain receptors or by lowering anxiety and making people think that the pain isn't as bad.
And as we've always learned, the pain is much worse in the following moments or hours or days later.
This is something we kind of all knew. I mean, and watch any video of someone drunk and stumbling around and getting themselves hurt.
Is there, on a serious note though, is there some truth to this when it comes to, say, a hangover the next day? And you have another, say, shot or beer or glass of wine, right? And the hangover is somehow cured.
That may be a bit of a destructive tornado you're creating there.
It requires further study.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour. It's Small Business Month, and Dell is celebrating innovators and job creators in a big way, like up to 40% off business PCs big. Even a free 1 terabyte external hard drive with select purchases big. Call 877-BUY-DELL today to connect with a U.S.-based advisor. They're ready to help with tech solutions tailored to your business, like finding just the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, because your hard work is more than appreciated, it's admired. Call 877-BUY-DELL today. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump's sudden decision to fire FBI Director James Comey raises many questions about the timing and how it will affect the FBI's most sensitive investigations. The dismissal comes as Comey was leading the probe into Russia's meddling in the presidential election. Senator Mark Warner of Virginia is vice chair of the Intelligence Committee.
Boy, oh boy, this is a set of dots that if you start connecting them, starts to really shout loud and clear. If you're affiliated with an investigation into Trump ties with Russia, you better watch out.
Senate Democrats will meet on the floor at 9:30 this morning to hear what, if anything, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will say about the firing. The conference will then meet to discuss next steps following last night's bombshell news. President Trump will meet Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov at the White House today to discuss Syria and a wide range of international issues. It will be the highest level contact between Trump and the government of Russian President Vladimir Putin since Trump took office. Just days into crafting a new bill to roll back Obamacare, Senate Republicans are already on the defensive over the absence of any women in their core working group. After a meeting of the Senate health care group yesterday, lawmakers were bombarded with questions as to why no women were on the 13-man panel. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Nobody's being excluded based upon gender.
Democrats pounce. Senator Patty Murray of Washington says Republican men are negotiating a secret health care plan, which I really hope is not happening in the men's locker room. The average CEO of an S&P 500 company made $13.1 million last year. In other words, 347 times more than the average worker. A report by Executive Pay Watch finds that since 1985, Wall Street bonuses have soared 890%, seven times the rise in the federal minimum wage. The average Wall Street bonus rose 1% to $138,210 last year, more than twice the median household annual income.
Good for them. The bonus alone of 138 grand.
You could use that, couldn't you?
Is that 2.5 times the median salary or something like that in the U.S., which is what, 55 grand? Something? Oh, my goodness. Why are we in radio again? Because we love it.
We love it.
We love serving the people. We love each other.
We serve the people.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. Glad you're with us. The airlines have been the subject of plenty of negative news lately. How about a positive story, although it's about a passenger, not so much the airline? USA Today says Carrie Grace McQuaid from Raleigh, North Carolina, on the day before her birthday, had to fly for work. She decided to celebrate by handing out goodie bags to crew members and passengers on her flight. After getting permission from Southwest Airlines, she wrapped 185 bags and prepared handwritten thank you notes for the pilot and crew. On the flight, she handed out each bag, connecting with each person. She says the lady behind her hugged her, told her it was her favorite flight ever. A flight attendant says she's never seen so much kindness on a flight. As people were exiting, they high-fived her, shook her hand, thanked her for being the good in the world. She says, "My heartbeat is this. If you're looking for bad news, you'll find it. If you want to find good news, then be it." That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.